to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio 89.1, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our seven-county listening area in central Iowa. Today, my co-host is Lars Olson, a journalist who has been covering county politics for a number of years. Hi, Lars. Please tell us how we'll be building community through communication with the guests you have invited from the towns of Boone and Story County.
Hello, Susan and listeners. Drive 15 miles out of Ames in any direction, and you'll find yourself in a thriving municipality. Smaller than Ames, but facing many of the same opportunities and challenges, plus ones resulting from the unique backgrounds and their close proximity to Ames and the Des Moines metropolitan area. Today, the city administrators from Boone, Huxley, Nevada, and Story City join us for a roundtable discussion about governing these communities. Welcome. I'd like to start by having each of you introduce yourselves, tell us how many people live in your area, and give us the number of people who work under you. Luke Nelson, I'll start with you.
Okay, thank you. My name is Luke Nelson. I work with the city of Boone. Our population is about 12,600 people, and we have about 65 full-time employees at the city.
Thank you. Moving to Elizabeth Hansen.
Hi, Elizabeth Hansen from the city of Nevada. We have approximately 7,000 residents in Nevada, and I manage 40 full-time employees and 70 in the summertime seasonal.
Mark Jackson.
Hi, Lars. Hi, Susan. Story City has a population of about 3,500, and we have approximately 25 full-time employees and about the same number of part-time employees that work for us, some throughout the year and mostly, though, in the summertime.
And John Haldeman.
Hi, Lars. My name is John Haldeman. I'm with the city of Huxley, and we're about 3,500 in population as well, and our employment levels are about the same as Story City, 25 full-time and about 30 seasonal part-time.
Each of you carry the title of administrator, but in Ames, the title that we use for the top government employee is city manager. What is the difference between a city administrator and a city manager, if anything? Any of you just jump right in there.
Nothing.
That was Mark.
There really isn't. There really isn't much difference in terms of what a city manager and a city administrator. Most of us operate under an ordinance, and you could go in and change the ordinance and call the title city manager. There's really no significant difference between the two, other than maybe that Steve Shanker's been here the longest, and that makes him the king, so he has the title of city manager.
Okay.
And also, Steve has a little more authority as far as hiring and firing of his personnel. I think all of us have to go through council to do either. Steve, in some cases, can do it directly.
Think of one or two parts of your duties. And as we go around, we should have a list then of what this job is. I'll start with Elizabeth.
Well, you know, the city managers or city administrators, we manage the day-to-day operations of the city. And now that's very general. However, the buck stops with us. So we want to make sure that our employees are held accountable. And when you talked about an organizational chart, the department heads report to me. So while some may micromanage and some may not, those constituents then pretty much go to the department head and then they come to us.
Thank you. That was Elizabeth Hansen, and she's from Nevada. Let's ask Mark Jackson from Story City. What are some of those departments?
Well, you know, rather than departments, what I was thinking of is probably one of the significant things we all do here is project management. From even it's an early idea from it, from conceptualization all the way to carrying to the end, whether it be a road construction project, water or sewer, or even to a lot of quality of life things that go on in our communities, building swimming pools, recreation centers or parks. I think besides overseeing employees in the departments they do, a lot of what we do is project management from beginning to end.
John, would you agree with that and add on to that?
Pretty much so. The day-to-day operation of the city does govern the departments as well as budgets and just general citizen interaction. We're also involved in economic development. We're also involved in different aspects of quality of life. We also reach out to the various other levels of government from county to state to deal with the legislatures on particular issues that may be relating to our city.
That was John Haldeman from Huxley. Luke, can you give us a partial list of the actual departments that would report to you and possibly the others?
Yeah, just a variety, anything from, for example, the Boone Municipal Airport, the building department, the engineer, water and sewer, the police department, the fire department, each one of these departments we'll work with on a day-to-day basis. Just for example, this morning talking with the school system about changing parking regulations around the school after they finished construction. You know, it can be that detailed, and then all the way up to talking to general project management like Mark talked about.
All right. Of those jobs, where do you spend most of your time? Mark Jackson from Story City.
Well, that depends. When you, right? You can have a day planned out and you walk in and it's just totally different from what you planned out. You know, there's really no how do you spend your time. I mean, it just depends on what's coming up in any particular day. You can have a personnel issue that's coming up, or a citizens that it's addressing something as well, or it can be just a general department head meeting, or it can be that, as John mentioned, you know, a significantly part of what we do has to do with economic development. It could be putting together information for a prospect that's coming in, to also showing a prospect around your community into an industrial area. So there's really no set of what you do. It just depends on what's going on at any particular time. For an example, right now in Story City, we're building a new aquatic center. To me, it's a swimming pool. So we spend a lot of time with engineers and the design and the building of that and how that's financed as well. So once that project really gets up and going, then we'll move into something else.
Elizabeth Hansen from
yes.
Nevada. How do you spend your time on a typical day or an atypical day?
Well, I will agree with Mark. We do have a variety of things going on in Nevada. And I'll give you examples, too. I was thinking just of yesterday, the four different meetings that I attended and started with, you know, some financial work on a development agreement, economic development. And then it kind of moved into a couple different lunch meetings and some other planning meetings for different projects and so forth as well. There's one thing that sticks in my mind is working with the school to perhaps request a PEG channel, so a local access channel, working with our medical center to deal with the wind turbines in Nevada. So it's just a variety. Every day is different. I think that's what makes it a challenge and also pretty fun.
Luke Nelson from Boone. Of all of those various activities that they've described so far, do you have a personal favorite?
Well, I don't know that I would call it a favorite. My favorite's probably just the variety. But for me, I think by and large, a big focus of my time is with public works in general, public works engineering, water, sewer, streets. That seems to be just a tremendous focus right now is the city putting money into infrastructure.
John Haldeman from Huxley, do you need formal training to be a city manager? City administrator.
The training aspect, when I was going through college, public administration was probably at the low end of the totem pole. It wasn't even really considered an occupation. But as time went on and the importance of local government, the overseeing of the operations, dealing with the new laws that may be coming forward both on the federal level and the state level, it became more practical to get that education, get where you could develop your experience. And I think a lot of us, probably the experience side of it was more of the education than the classroom.
And did you start out working for the City of Huxley?
City of Huxley was my first job as city administrator. But prior to that, I spent 11 years on the Davenport City Council. That was the experience aspect that led me into public administration. And then from Huxley, I went to Anamosa, to Burlington, back to Anamosa, back to Huxley.
Elizabeth Hansen, okay. How about with Nevada? How did you end up as the city administrator?
This is my 14th year in the career. So I got my master's in public administration and finished my my coursework in 2001. My first position was an hour away from my hometown of Sioux Falls. So I started in Elk Point, South Dakota, town of 1,700 population, doubled that population and went to Jefferson, Iowa for about 3.5 years. And then I've been in Nevada for 7.
Okay, thank you. We'll go to Mark Jackson of Story City.
My first position out of college was is a manager in Michigan. That's where I was born and raised, was in Kalamazoo. And my wife is from Iowa, and she came up with this idea, but boy, wouldn't it be great if you were a city manager in Iowa? It really hadn't crossed my mind, I have to admit. It was a wonderful state. Loved visiting the in-laws here. But when she started looking through the ads in terms of city manager positions, she noticed the one for Story City, Iowa, and knew that it was close to Ames. There were certain things we wanted. You know, it was near a larger city in a university community. And so it was the smallest community I had interviewed in. But I can tell you, I remember getting off the interstate and driving into town. I had never seen and still have never seen a prettier entrance into a community than Story City, and just fell in love with the council and the town. And we've been here ever since. And that's been 21 years.
Okay. I'm sure that the other city administrators are proud of their entranceways also. But Luke Nelson from Boone, what was your background as you came into city administrator position?
Well, my undergrad at I went to Iowa State University, so this is what I've called home for a long time, this general area. I received my undergrad in community and regional planning, and from there I actually went to work in Warrenville, Illinois, a suburb of Chicago. From there, I was there for about a year and didn't really enjoy all the smell of diesel and everything that goes along with that big city. So I began looking for a position back in Iowa, ended up working in Boone County as the director of planning and development, went back to school for a master's degree, and ultimately a position opened up, a city administration position. I'd gotten to know so many of the elected officials. To start out in my first position at a community the size of Boone is a little bit unique. But because I think I was so familiar with the community, it was just kind of a good fit.
Thank you. You are listening to KHOI 89.1 FM radio. Today on Local Talk, we are discussing the opportunities and challenges facing four modern small cities near Ames with city administrators John Haldeman of Huxley, Elizabeth Hansen of Nevada, Mark Jackson of Story City, and Luke Nelson of Boone. Iowa cities are working on their budgets for the next fiscal year right now, which begins, of course, this July 1st. Could you please give us a brief overview of your city's budget, including how much you and your respective city councils expect to spend during the 2015-2016 year? And I think I'll start with Luke Nelson of Boone again.
Okay. In the city of Boone, overall, our total budget, including utilities and general fund, we're in the neighborhood of about $14 million. A large portion of that is our enterprise funds, which is water and sewer. Those are two utilities that we provide.
Could you explain an enterprise fund to the listeners?
The best way to look at it is your general fund that operates from property tax. That's more of your government-type services. When you get into utilities like water, sewer, for example, the city of Ames has electric. I'm not sure what some of the other communities here have. But those utilities, they call them an enterprise fund because they operate more like a business. Your income is supposed to match what you're producing for that particular utility.
Okay, thank you. Elizabeth Hansen, how about the budget in Nevada?
Our budget process starts in September, and it takes us to the middle of March. So it's quite a long process. It's very much involved with several different public meetings and also council committee meetings and, of course, many staff meetings. So it's a very long process, but it's good to have that available so people can see that we're vetting every avenue, every line item, and so forth. But unlike Luke's budget, we are at 17.5, and about every 3 years, it jumps up about another anywhere between, say, $3 to $9 million. So last year, we had $9 million in projects, industrial projects, additional street projects, and so forth, that increased our budget above the 17.5. So again, just add it on.
And we'll come back later to the individual projects that might add on to your budget. We'll go to John Haldeman of Huxley now. How about your budget?
Our net operating budget's around $7 million. This year, we're up about 0.5% with council instructions of not to increase taxes and spending. So we've been holding the line for a few years. Overall levy has gone from 1184 per thousand to 1185. So we're pretty much status quo. We've got some projects we're finishing up on in this next budget year. But overall, we've been able to adjust as our growth has been pretty good. We've been averaging about 3 to 4% overall as far as city growth, tax base, et cetera. So we've been pretty much staying inside of that.
Mark Jackson, how about Story City's budget?
You know, it's going to be pretty comparable to John over in Huxley, but all of us are going to be pretty similar. And, you know, and the one thing I would indicate to everybody that it's not a dollar amount because it's so fluid, and a lot of it has to do with what capital projects you're doing in any given year. As Elizabeth pointed out, it can make your numbers seem really high one year. Like for ours, it was extremely high because we were building a $4 million water treatment plant. And once you're done, it backs down to a more normal level. So when everybody's saying, well, what's your budget, it's very fluid and it's all over the board. But since John, they all brought it up in terms of levy rate, I'm just going to say in Story City, our levy rate next year is proposed to be $9.44. And even to the listeners here in Ames, that's still cheaper than the city of Ames. In fact, it's like, I think the only one less than us is Cambridge. So other than that, we're the lowest in Story County.
I have followed the governments of Story County for a long time, and this is not the first.
I just had to, you know, get that in, John. You know that.
That's fine.
Yeah, I know.
This is not the first time. But
one difference between us and I say is that John's pointed out there is a little difference, though. John is seeing a tremendous amount of growth in his community. And I would say ever since the recession, the Great Recession we've started in the last several years in Story City, we've actually seen some stagnant growth that we've had in our community. We haven't seen the same level of housing development or commercial industrial development that we once used to see. And so that does impact your revenue. So we have seen a little bump up in our tax levy rate. But that is a big difference whether you're a growing or not growing community. We're not growing. We're just not seeing as much. You have to make adjustments accordingly.
And I'd like to remind the listeners at this point that the levy rate is that percentage amount or dollar amount per thousand of taxable value that goes to your property taxes that you pay on. And so if you have a lot of property value, you can keep your levy rate low as long as you keep your expenses lower. But if you need to go in, correct, and pay for a special project, you might go ahead and raise the levy rate, correct?
Yeah, raising a levy rate is not a dirty word. We're in this mindset in government that somehow that it's wrong not to do that. You know, I can point out going back to when I first started, there's some years, yeah, we lower taxes. But then there's some years where you need to increase them a little bit. And so there's nothing wrong. You know, we're in this mindset, lower, lower, lower. And government is part of the problem. We got into this mindset of doing more with less. Well, I'll tell you, you do less with less.
All right. I know Elizabeth Hansen from Nevada wants to weigh in.
I do want to weigh in. Actually, the city of Nevada is very, very proud of having about the same tax levy for 19 years. And the only two jumps were capital improvement levies, mm-hmm. one in 2008 when the community voted to increase the levy, of course, for trail improvements. And then the second one was just in 2013 with a library expansion project. So other than that, it's been about the same for 19 years. And doing a comparison of communities our size, we've done that comparison with about 14 communities, and we're sitting at number 5.
Thank you. Luke Nelson, tell me about Boone. And since we've gotten on this of the levy rate, okay, can you go ahead and explain to us how it works there in Boone and how you're handling your capital improvements?
All right. Well, in Boone, it was interesting to hear Elizabeth talk about maintaining that same levy because Boone has really tried to take that same approach in maintaining the levy that we've had. Not quite sure it's been 19 years. That's impressive. But we've held the same levy rate for a long time. And there's a lot of factors that go into those levy rates, your overall value, just as you pointed out earlier, your values. I'm guessing that the three of you have the same county assessor that determines values on all your properties. We have a different assessor in Boone County that determines values. And I'm sure in each one of those departments, different people work on those valuations. And there's always the issue of individual property owners that believe that their value is not as high as what the assessor may believe it is. So from community to community, even using a levy rate as a comparison can be difficult. To me, it's a lot better to go and look at overall what is the total cost of living that gives you a good picture.
Well, the other point is, too, is that the levy rate is only one part of how the tax system works. It's like Luke pointed out, you can have a levy rate, but then it depends on your valuation. If you have the same levy rate and your valuation's lower, you pay less. But then you throw in, what's the rollback going to be? So you really have to factor, it's not just people look at levy rate and say, is it higher or lower, and are my taxes higher or lower just based on that levy rate? It's based on valuation. It's based on what the rollback's going to be.
And, Mark, can you give us a 15-second explanation of rollback? John.
Let's let John do rollback.
John Haldeman of Huxley. Please explain in 15 seconds or less rollback.
Wow.
Rollback established by the state legislature, and there are several rollbacks that we deal with every year. And then the last 2 years, it's become multiple. We deal with a residential rollback. In just the last couple years, we have now added multiple family or apartment complex rollback. We've added commercial. We've added industrial. There's changes that will be forecasted down the line. So we have to take a look at those, what the impacts are, what adjustments can be made to offset those, because the existing industry, which was part of a stable tax base, is now declining by this rollback. But the service requests for those various sections are not declining. They're being asked to increase.
And that's why one of the points that we were talking about, I may make fun of John in terms of Huxley's tax levy rate. Mine can be lower because John's primarily a residential community. And residential community rollback is between that 50 and 55%. Approximately 40, 45% of my community is industrial commercial development. That makes a big difference in terms of why my levy rate can be lower. That's why I wanted to get into and talk a little bit about levy rates can be very misleading in terms of things, because it can be based on, are you a residential, industrial, commercial, are you growing, not growing? All factors in.
And yet he taunts you with his that dollar amount.
But I save him in the end. You know, I'll say nice things about him.
There is one.
Okay, that was Mark Jackson of Story City. And now Luke Nelson of Boone wants to weigh in again.
Well, the rollback is something I've fought and trying to find a good way of explaining what the rollback is. And the best way I found is just to go back in a more simpler form of just agriculture and residential. Many years ago, the goal was to try to keep those values from outpacing each other too fast. I've used the example, you have two runners. One's real fast, one's slower. It's like shackling them together. And what has happened over time is that has drawn down that residential value down to that even sub 50% range.
And then I'd like to move on now. And I'd like to talk about excluding the capital improvement projects, the special projects like the new water treatment facility or a new aquatic center / swimming pool. Where do you spend most of your money?
Emergency services. Sorry, pretty simply, emergency services. I'd be shocked if any community here doesn't see at least 50% of their general fund revenues going towards emergency services, that being police and fire primarily.
Okay, that was for Boone. Elizabeth?
Same for us. We're 40% in public safety department, and then also probably pretty close second would be parks and recreation.
Thank you. That's
same
Mark.
Same as Nevada. Mm-hmm. No
right.
difference.
For Story City,
yes.
And John for Huxley.
Yeah, there's no change there. Between police, fire, ambulance, and really park and rec, those pretty much eat up the general fund.
Does that match citizen expectation about where you're going to spend your money? And we'll go in reverse order and start with John Haldeman of Huxley.
You know, the communities, and I think all of us have police, we have fire, ambulance, and they want that public safety aspect. They want to feel comfortable in their homes. They want that family to know that if there was a problem, someone would be there to respond. There are some communities that contract out for those services. We hold our own in that area. The park and rec aspect of it, you're always dealing with the quality of life. The kids want to play baseball. They want to play basketball. They want to do recreational type items. And so, yeah, they do expect it. And they probably would expect more. But we try to explain, if you want more, it's going to cost more.
How about the three of you? What do you think about it? Do your citizens have the expectations that match up with where you really spend your money?
It is. But I would say this has been, at least in my career, this has been the change that's taken place over time. And it's a generational thing. First of all, everybody expects safety. And we all get that. Mm-hmm. Those quality of life things now have moved up to being equal with public safety and infrastructure improvements. Probably it used to be before, those were seen as almost luxury items. And in order to attract, I would say, young families today or economic development in companies, those are the same as an essential corporate purpose. So I would say during my career, and I've been in this for 25 years now, that's probably one change is terms of expectations of community members for those quality of life things equal towards public safety and infrastructure. And I don't know if you're seeing the same thing in your communities, but that's what I'm seeing.
That was Mark Jackson from Story City. How about Elizabeth Hansen of Nevada?
Last night we had our Vision 2020 update, and we did that. It started in 96, I believe, is when it was started, the plan started, got complete in 98. So we had a couple more years yet to go, but we did a review of what the city has done over the past 20 years. And again, seeing that there was a laundry list of recreational cultural opportunities that the city was wanting, and we've done many of those things. But last night when they said, what else do we want to do in the next 5 years, a recreational center came to the top. And everybody at the tables raised their hand and said, how can we get that done? So that was very, very interesting. So that really kind of is a really good example of what we're talking about right now.
Luke Nelson of Boone.
Where we've been, I see that the city of Boone spent a significant amount of dollars probably in the past decade or decade and a half on some of those quality of life things like upgrading a library, and the aquatic center at that point in time was built, some advancements at that point. Since then, it's been working on maintaining those items, but I've seen a real shift in our elected officials of taking more of a focus again, and I've mentioned this before, on infrastructure. That's been a real big push, and some of that might be because I think Mark made a good point. It's generational, and right now, if those rec centers, if that's a key issue, the next phase may be going on to other type of priorities like what we're thinking about at this point.
You have been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio 89.1, where we explore the people, stories, and events in central Iowa. Loris Olson has been talking with four area city administrators about governing in today's environment.
A few minutes ago, we talked about the fact that Huxley was a growing community. Story City, by the description I believe Mark Jackson gave, was a little bit stagnant right now, or steady. For Nevada and Boone, are you growing? Are you steady?
In the last census, we grew by 140 folks, and that's been about the same growth in the last three decades. So I think I would say it's steady. It's steady growth, but it makes it easy to plan for growth. You know, steady growth that way. So
that was Elizabeth Hansen of Nevada, and Luke Nelson. How about Boone?
Yeah, actually, very similar to Nevada. We've seen very, I'm going to say, stable. Our growth in residential hasn't been very significant. It's been more on the commercial and industrial side where we've seen some development and redevelopment. Boone, where I see that we're somewhat unique from some of the other communities, is the amount of development and growth that has happened just beyond corporate limits, something that certainly can become an issue depending on thoughts and concerns of some of your local elected officials. So the Boone area has seen some growth. Unfortunately, some of that has been just outside corporate limits.
Why is that?
Well, some would argue that folks, and again, it might be generational, they're looking for more of that acreage-type feel. They don't want to be too close to a neighbor. That's some of what people are saying, is that's just the market that opened up.
Does it help or hinder your management efforts and the growth efforts in your community to be located so close to Ames? Let's start with Mark Jackson of Story City this time.
There are pluses and minuses to being located near Ames. Obviously, when we've done surveys, it comes back the same every time. Two-thirds of the people that live in Story City work at Iowa State University, Department of Transportation, or the Federal Disease Lab. So there's a stable employment base that helps your community. However, it's a struggle. We have one grocery store. If we were a more regional center type of thing, you would see more of that sort of thing. But because we're so close to Ames, I tell people it's like me living in Kalamazoo driving across town. Living in Story City is like driving across town to Ames, except without the traffic lights. It's a lot easier where all the stores are located. So there is that impact in terms of all the shopping that's available here in Ames does have sort of that retail impact adversely sometimes on a city like Story City.
Elizabeth Hansen, let's go for Nevada next and actually talk about grocery shopping in Nevada and tie that, then go to Boone.
Okay. Well, we just have one grocery store as well, so we have the same situation. Our retail is moving to Ames, and industrial growth is going that direction because really around Ames, that's the only direction that industrial growth will probably go, is going east for them and west for us. So we're kind of meeting halfway in the middle in that area. It is a struggle only in that retail aspect, I would say. Housing is probably difficult for all of us. So I could probably say that. But, you know, the proximity to Ames and Des Moines is good for industrial developers. They want to be able to have access to the airports and to the interstate for commerce. So it's all good.
Luke Nelson of Boone.
I think the things that Mark and Liz talked about are great. Those are very similar to some of the things I would have said. There is good and bad. Sometimes even the things you might perceive as bad, it's still positive. Regional growth in Nevada and Huxley and Story City, it benefits all of us when the whole region grows. And when Ames can do things and they can offer services here, especially having a university right here in Ames, some of those things greatly benefit the surrounding communities. And the other big thing is a more built-up population is going to provide for more potential employees, which is something that's important to employers as well.
I saved Huxley for last, John Haldeman, specifically because when the grocery store issue came up, tell us about the proximity to Ames and Des Moines for you and what challenges and growth opportunities you've got.
Well, with Huxley, we're about dead center between Ames and Ankeny. And the pot, as Mark had indicated earlier about his citizens and where they work, you can watch Huxley in the morning and it's about a 50-50 split going north and south. And I think that's one of our selling points is that it is an easy commute to be able to work in Ankeny and Des Moines or Ames and live in Huxley. And we're fortunate based on that and the population growth that we were able to attract Fairway Grocery to locate in Huxley. We've annexed out beyond the interstate. There's another industrial park out there. So we're preparing for the future and trying to have things in place to make the transition smoother.
Elizabeth Hansen, the future of Nevada. Where do you see your challenges and your opportunities?
Great question. Right now, we're waiting for the Iowa Department of Transportation Commission to approve an interchange at Airport Road. That's going to create both challenges and opportunities. I can envision some commercial development going on both sides of the highway. However, some people might say closing off 6th Street would be a hindrance to our downtown. With that said, the city is planning for a City Hall campus park. It's right in front of our City Hall to try to attract people to an open campus downtown to gather for concerts or the farmers market and other community band performances and so forth. That's one of the most immediate projects in this next summer that we'd like to do, but also planning for full reconstruction of our main street. And that would be in the next 5 to 7 years, I'd say. And that would be full reconstruction, storefront to storefront, curb to curb, water, wastewater, streetscape improvements. And in the last couple months, the city council agreed to a contract with the Iowa Architectural Foundation. And in April, we'll be starting charrettes with the community to look at planning for the streetscaping, planning for facade improvements, and then directional signage for coming off of the interstate.
And charrettes are basically a public input process.
That's
correct.
Right.
Okay. Mark Jackson, Story City in the future, headed ahead.
Two pluses, two challenges. I think on the plus side, city's the major landowner of the land that's out on the interstate, and we're starting to see signs of sort of this recession ending. So I think on the commercial industrial side of things, we're going to start seeing some significant growth that's going to occur out into that area. The other thing we have planned is, you know, where the swimming pool is at is it's an anchor in the park system. And we have a major refurbishment of our two major park systems as you drive into town. So I think over the next 3 years, you're going to see a major change in terms of the park system and the entrance into the community. Now, two challenges that I do see is housing is an issue for us. In terms of the availability of land for us in terms of having housing development, I think is going to be a significant challenge. I think the other challenge related to that has to do with demographics. And I think that one of the things as a county we're going to have a general discussion about down the road is Iowa State University and their growth. Because what we're seeing is with that growth, and there's a lot of positives that go along with it, but there's some challenges that bring with it. And what's happened there is as these students have moved into what were a affordable rental housing and apartments for low to moderate income people no longer are low to moderate income affordability because the prices rise. Therefore, what we're starting to see, I know in Story City we're seeing it, and I'm assuming they're seeing it in Boone and Nevada, is those individuals are moving out into these other outlying communities what poses challenges to us, because a lot of these individuals benefit from a lot of the nonprofits that get money from asset. We don't necessarily have those kind of resources, transportation being one of them. So I think it's something that eventually as a county we're going to have to sit down and have a discussion about. Like I said, I think there's some great things going on in Iowa State. I think there's some great things with the growth that's going on. But with any kind of growth brings challenges, and this is one of the challenges that affect, I think, most of our communities.
Before I go to Boone, let's finish up with Story County. John, other opportunities that you see and also the challenges?
Well, I think part of the challenge is, I'm going to go back to something Luke said earlier, dealing with infrastructure. For many years, water and sewer upgrades had not taken place. And when you have a community that's looking at growth to do those sort of things. So a lot of it got thrown into the mix at once, new water plant, new wastewater plant, improvement of water mains, sewer mains, and then you throw the growth on top of that. We've gotten through that part of the transition. Now we're paying for it as far as the debt service. So there, to the growth side of it, there's that negative is it cost. And you try to level it out over a period of time, but in some cases you're not fortunate and it comes at you all at once. But being where we are, similar to, you know, Story City, Nevada, and even Boone, we're experiencing growth. The last census, we were at 3,300. We're probably close to 3,700. But we'll just keep working at it. And it's fun to watch. So that positive side of it is to see how it all develops.
Thank you. That was John Haldeman from Huxley. And now we'll move to Boone County with Luke Nelson, who's the city administrator of Boone.
Thank you. I think that these folks covered some excellent things. And, Mark, the way you put it into words about the some of the demographics, I couldn't echo that more, that is something that is absolutely a concern.
I mean, don't you see that poverty is probably one of the major issues that we're probably going to be dealing with, mm-hmm. say, over the next 5 years to a decade?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that is absolutely one of the challenges. Another big challenge that I see, and I know I'm probably going to see some smiles around the table, each year between the state of Iowa, our state legislature, and the federal government, we deal with more and more new regulations. And in terms of nutrient reduction strategies, things that are even being pushed down from the federal level, all of those are going to have a pretty significant impact on our local governments. Granted, a lot of them are utilities, water treatment plants, sewer treatment plants, but I see that being one of our biggest challenges. Also, we're seeing this continued trend, even though they're talking about a gas tax increase. At the state level, we constantly get the feeling that we're being squeezed as local governments, squeezed in terms of our ability to cover our expenses with different ways of raising revenue. We just keep getting held back again and again. In terms of opportunities, in Boone, what I see as the best potential is we have a number of different industrial parks that are poised for growth. Residential, that probably slips more into the challenge category. But for us, I see that we've positioned ourselves well to handle some commercial growth. Boone is fortunate that we do have a regional airport, and we also have a major rail center nearby. And we're starting to see more and more attention on communities that have readily available access to railroad. And with the Boone and Scenic Valley Railroad, they have a dedicated spur. So that puts us in the market for a number of different industrial opportunities.
We could continue this discussion for 3 or 4 more hours minimum, I'm sure. However, our time has come to an end. This is Laura Solson with co-host Susan Franzen. We would like to thank city administrators John Haldeman of Huxley, Mark Jackson of Story City, Elizabeth Hansen of Nevada, and Luke Nelson of Boone for joining us today. It was a fascinating and I hope enlightening discussion about the challenges, the opportunities of what face your city, and a look into the day-to-day operations of those people who run the cities near the Ames area. So thank you very much, and thank you for continuing to listen. I hope that in the future you will think about coming back and being with us again.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is KHOI Community Radio, 89.1 FM. Journalist Lars Olson has been interviewing the city administrators of Nevada, Boone, Story City, and Huxley about how the budgets for the coming year reflect the city's priorities, their needs, and how the towns are different from each other. And now we're going to a different kind of communication and a different kind of cooperation worldwide. the Great Backyard Bird Count, which was held all over the world February 13th to 16th. And outdoors writer Todd Burris is here to tell us the significance of that and what participation was like here in our central Iowa region. We have with us in the studio today somebody who probably needs no introduction to a lot of readers of the Tribune, Todd Burris, whose columns have run for several years there. Is that right?
Yeah. I was at the Tribune on and off for almost 20 years. And then I think in 2001, I started the outdoor page, resurrected the outdoor page. The Tribune had had a long history of having an outdoor page with Olaf Smeadle. And then sometime in the late 80s and early 90s, that went away. And so then in 2001, when Dave Kramer was the editor there, I started the outdoor page and have been doing that regularly ever since, I guess, 14 years now. Actually, 14 years this month, I think. So,
well, so where do you come from? Do you come from journalism? Do you come from some kind of biological science? Do you come from just love of nature? Where do you come from?
Well, I'm an Iowan. I'm from north central Iowa, and I went to the University of Missouri for journalism school, spent several years covering sports, and then did a couple other things in between, and got married along the way and kind of got reconnected with my outdoor roots. I grew up on a farm. My mother was, I guess you would call her a birder, although that wasn't a word that anybody used back then necessarily, but she was the one who always had a bird book and was, if she saw something interesting, she would call me or my siblings to the window and say, oh, look, you know, there's a Baltimore Oriole out there or something. And so 15 or 20 years ago, I kind of started reconnecting with some of my roots with that. And then my appreciation for wildlife and for birding in particular has really taken off in the last decade or so.
Well, you mentioned your mother. I noticed in one of your recent articles that your daughter is going out with you now, at least fishing, at least ice fishing.
Well, I've got her birding, too. There's a great statewide organization, Young Birders of Iowa, that started maybe 3 years ago, and they offer field trips around the state to kids 18 and under, I think. And I've taken her on a number of trips around the state to Ledges or Sailorville. And so she's really gotten interested in birding. And so I actually started a birding life list with her. So she's up to over 100 species of birds now in just a little over a year and is excited about that. So every time we see something new, she says, oh, Dad, is that on my list? If not, we need to go home and add it. So she's a lot of fun to have with.
Since we're going to be talking about websites a little bit this morning, because I discovered you through the Cornell Ornithologists Union website for the Great Backyard Bird Count. Mm-hmm. And I think that is such a fantastic resource, even for people who aren't birders.
Right.
And then in the course of that, I discovered this Young Birders website, which I think is absolutely delightful. All kinds of very local things that are going on or that kids would be interested in or adults would be interested in. So I want people to know those. There'll be links to those on our website when we put up the show.
Good, good. Yeah, the new one of the new executive directors for Iowa Young Birders is a young guy from here in Ames, Tyler Harms, who works at Iowa State and then leads a lot of these field trips on the side, too. So it's nice to have another local Ames connection there.
This is supposed to be about the Great Backyard Bird Count. Could you tell a little about, to start with, your experience in this weekend, because I know you were there.
My history with the Great Backyard Bird Count, and I think this was the only the 18th year, the Christmas Bird Count goes back to right around the turn of the 20th century, around 1900. So that's a really long citizen science project. Then the Great Backyard Bird Count, I became aware of when I started the outdoor page, and maybe through Wild Birds Unlimited, I got some information about it. And so maybe 10 or 11 years ago, I started doing it. And I think back then we actually just kept track on paper ballots maybe, and then took them to Wild Birds Unlimited, and somehow Linda Thomas took care of them and mailed them in or something. And then it didn't take long, and they got it up and online. And so it's really quick and easy and accessible. And I think that's one of the things that I was drawn to and why I got interested in it. It's not real intimidating or imposing. It's basically spend 15 minutes at a stretch or longer just counting birds that you see in your yard, And I figured I can tell at least what a blue jay is or a cardinal or a nuthatch or whatever. And so that's how I just got started. And every year, I've done it for probably 10 or 11 years now. And the Christmas bird count, they actually go out in teams and usually have some, you know, a professional birders and ornithologists that lead groups, or real experienced birders. I've not done the Christmas bird count.
I see.
No, just the backyard bird count. So I've always wanted to go on a Christmas bird count, but I just haven't gotten plugged into that yet. So,
but this is really sort of an easy way to begin. If you're not quite sure, and if you watch the website, there's great feedback. You can see your posting go up there with your name.
Right. And your neighbors or other people in the community, in the county, and by state.
Yeah.
So it is. It's really fun to kind of check up and see what other people are seeing. And you can participate as much or as little as you like. So that's one of the things that I am drawn to about it.
How many people were involved this year?
Well, I know last year they had 120,000 or so, and this originally started out in the United States and Canada, that they were trying to get a snapshot of winter bird populations kind of before the spring migration. But then other people in other parts of the world kind of started getting involved, and so it's become a global event, but the majority of the birding takes place in North America still, although as it grows, I'm sure it'll become more of a global event. So they use these studies in combination, and so they work together with all of these different counts, and it starts to give them, they can start to see trends and see if bird populations are shrinking or growing, or if territories are expanding or retracting. And so over time, if they get enough information, they can start to see those trends and make some, start to draw some conclusions on that and see where maybe they need to do more study and research.
And is there any practical uses for this? I mean, for example, if they find that, I think as they found this year, the big story in Iowa has been the trumpeter swans that have wintered over here. And this is, I think, pretty new. And I looked in those bird counts and, you know, hundreds of trumpeter swans.
Yeah, over 200 at Beamer's Pond up in by Webster City at one point in January, I know. I don't know what's there right now, but and we've seen a lot up at Ada Hayden this winter, too. I think Wolf Osterite counted maybe 68 one night, which was the most ever at the park that anybody had counted. So, I don't know exactly what that tells us other than that their numbers are growing. They're not maybe needing to migrate as far south in the winter as long as there's open water. They're big birds, so they're pretty easy to count, and they do stand out. You know, there's other things like we have a place in northeastern Minnesota, and there historically that is not a range where northern cardinals have been. Iowa and southern Minnesota were kind of the extent of their range for a long period of time, but in recent years, people have begun reporting sightings of northern cardinals in all the way up in northeastern Minnesota, right by the Canadian border. And the Great Backyard Bird Count has been one of those studies that they've used where they've been able to start tracking that. And, you know, that's telling them that there's something going on in the environment, whether it's the winters aren't as harsh or, the global warming is having an effect. And I do all my counting for the most part from my kitchen window and then from my office and bedroom windows upstairs and just kind of move between them. And you can count them anywhere. You can drive out to Ada Hayden and count birds and submit that information. But I mainly stick with our yard. And although two years ago, I think I had an incidental count that I was in West Ames and saw a flock of 40 or 50 goldfinches, which is pretty unusual because normally they've gone south for the winter. And so I stopped counting. Went back home and recorded the location and the sighting. Every year for the newspaper, I always promote the Christmas bird count and then the Great Backyard Bird Count because I just think it's I love birding myself, but I just think it's such a fun hobby to have that it doesn't matter what age or what skill level you're at with it. And It is. There's a whole community of people out there that are interested in birds, all range of abilities and backgrounds and so forth. And there's a lot of good things that happen in this community, in the birding community. There's Big Bluestem Audubon has been offering a series of spring and fall migration walks the past couple of years, and I think they're going to do that again this spring, so probably starting in April. They'll be leading a series of 8 or 10 walks that's just open to the public. And so you get somebody that knows a lot more about birds than you do, and you go out and you have fun and you take your binoculars and you see what you can see and what you can hear. So that's just my pitch for all of it today.
Well, thank you, Todd. We've been talking with Todd Burris, whose columns on nature, on the outdoors, appear in the Ames Tribune.
And I've got a blog. Well, it's just at amestrib.com, but it's Woods, Words, and Wildlife is the blog. So.
This week, our focus on entertainment in the surrounding area will feature two bands from Marshalltown. The first to mention is the Diamond Clear Cut Rock Band, which will be playing at the Talent Factory in Nevada on Saturday, February 21st at 7 p.m. They play 60s through 90s classic rock. But our special news is about the Marshall County Hangmen, which played at the Talent Factory last year and have also performed elsewhere in Story and Boone counties. At the end of this week, the four members of the Marshall County Hangmen will be traveling to Alabama for a recording session at the legendary Muscle Shoals Fame Studios, where such greats as Aretha Franklin, Paul McCartney, Bob Dylan, and Lynyrd Skynyrd made records. To find out about the great IPTV documentary on Muscle Shoals, go to our website for the link, or just Google Muscle Shoals and you'll find it. But this is really an exciting event for Central Iowa, that we have somebody going to Muscle Shoals. This is a road trip we hope to cover when they return, but for now we'll just play a little clip from their current album. This is Rock, Rock, Rock by the Marshall County Hangmen.
In the meantime, roll, roll, roll. Seems like all my life I've been trying to reach the brass ring. When you finally get it, it don't mean a thing. Goals are fine if you got nothing left to lose. When you've got family, you really.
You have been
have
listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, 89.1 FM, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our seven-county listening area in Central Iowa. I've been your host for today, Susan Franzen, and my co-host was Loris Olson, journalist with extensive experience covering the county, who has gathered the city administrators of surrounding towns for a roundtable discussion in our studio. These are Elizabeth Hansen of Nevada, Luke Nelson of Boone, John Haldeman of Huxley, and Mark Jackson of Story City. And Todd Burris, outdoor writer. Music you have heard has been Rock, Rock, Rock by the Marshall County Hangmen. This show was engineered by Loris Olson. Our theme song is Backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley.
You can also listen to this show and all of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, KHOI-FM, where we are streaming live. You'll find recent shows on our homepage with links to the organizations and other resources mentioned on our shows.
If you enjoyed this show, tell your friends and consider becoming one of the 500 families donating $20 per month or $250 per year to help us meet our operating expenses.
though we'd appreciate whatever fits into your budget. We'd also like to hear your feedback either by phone at 515-292-2878 or by email at khoiradio@gmail.com with news in the subject line. Or stop in at the KHOI studios at 410 Douglas in Ames.
Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a radio show. If you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 515-292-2878. Your participation as audience is what makes KHOI possible. Thank you for listening, and see you again on the radio.